Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
And we've got a very special guest today, Helen. We've got a doctor.
A doctor's in the house. But what kind of doctor is she? Is she any use to us?
I was hoping you'd go, Doctor Who? No?
No.
No, well, fair enough.
Missed
no.
that opportunity for lols. Sorry.
Yes. Who are you, Doctor?
I'm not Doctor Who. I am a Doctor of Psychology.
Oh, that's right. You are Dr. Angharad Rudkin. Welcome, Dr. Rudkin. What do you prefer, Doc? Big Doc? Rudders?
Hey, Rudd.
Ango.
Angrahard and Hagrid.
Yeah.
Angie Hallrad.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh,
what is the correct pronunciation?
Angharad. Well, Angharad.
Okay. Let's just call you Dr. Rudkin. So, Dr. Rudkin, you are a clinical psychologist. What is your specialist subject?
My specialist subject today is children.
Oh.
And teenagers and
well,
parents.
Well, they're pretty fucked up. I don't know what they are. Help us, Angharad.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah. You've done a lot of work with kids and families.
Yeah.
Well done,
yeah.
You.
Yeah. And I do. It's quite nice because I meet with children and families a lot, and we talk about sadness and worries and stuff like that. And then I do a bit of research around children and families as well. So it's quite nice.
Have you ever thought of just maybe working in a supermarket, get a job behind a bar, just something a bit jollier? Just a thought, just putting it out there.
Well, you know what? Yeah, and I do daily wonder actually about that, because the problem with my job, I love it to bits, but the problem is there's never an end point. You never get a child going, "Thanks, Doc, I'm sorted. I'm
really
happy forevermore." And I never get parents who go, "Oh, that's just brilliant.
You fixed him.
We're never going to have a problem again." So there's never actually an end point. So I just usually sort of limp off into the sunset a little bit and go, is that enough? Is that okay?
She's like a dodgy mechanic. They always have to come back for something else.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Oh, he's frying the spiders now. Oh, bloody hell.
Oh my god. But what look, to be all honest here, what an amazing job, and what joy you must get from helping families and children.
Completely. And I don't want to sound too sentimental, but completely.
Because we're all great humanitarians here.
Oh,
just welcome to the circle.
Good. Yes. Because even very sad children are very fun children. You know, children are actually, and when they're not yours, children are great fun to be with, and they are very hopeful, and they are actually very resilient. And they're happy just to have a different view of the world. You know, they're really flexible. So it's really lovely.
But whose children are you talking about?
Yeah, I'd say not my own.
You tell my son he's having a ham sandwich and then you give him cheese, he has an absolute meltdown. I don't know how flexible that is.
Oh, there's a diagnosis for that, but we'll talk about that later.
This is basically what we've got you on the podcast for. Yeah. We've got a list of things of why our children are, you know, not quite right. So we'll just have a private session for free.
Yeah, that's fine. Now, obviously, as a psychologist with years of experience, you yourself must be a perfect mother, Dr. Rudkin. Tell us about your family. Are they all completely well-balanced? You know, they're emptying the dishwasher and putting their shoes away and laughing all day, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. So in their, you know,
geniuses.
Clothes that we've sewn ourselves and beautiful craft sessions. And yeah, no, we limp along. We do limp along. And what is wonderful, actually, is my husband's a shift worker, so he's around a lot. And that is not to be underestimated in terms of I'm not there day in, day out for hours by myself, because I'm a different parent when he's there than when I'm on my own. And I'm glad there's not cameras in the house most of the time.
I've got something to tell you. Helen, press play. It's time.
Oh, Beatles not last about. Night. It's all been a lie. Yeah.
But you know what? I love my children so much, and even through the grot and the grit and all sorts, I absolutely love them. So we get a lot of joy from one another, but it's blinking hard work. It is
literally relentless, isn't it? And you have three,
and
which
I have
is
three.
One more than two.
It is one more, but
you know, too many, isn't it?
Three less than six.
but that's what they taught you at university. That PhD.
Quick skills.
But I think what's really important, and the lesson that I've learned over the years of being a parent, which has changed what kind of psychologist I am as well, but it's to learn it's not my fault if it really goes wrong, but it's also not my thing when it all goes very well. Actually, I cannot take credit nor take too much blame.
I'm going to sit here and listen to this, Ellie. Take credit for when they're really well behaved and lovely, and then go, oh, it's your father's family.
You know, so you can sort of think, oh, well, you know, maybe there's a bit of, but actually they are their own beings. But that comforts me when it is also going really bad, and you know, I'm sitting sobbing in the kitchen after putting them to bed thinking, how did it all go so wrong? That actually there's so many variables, there's so many factors that contribute to our children being the way they are. That we are one of them, and we're a pretty major one, but we're not the only one.
Oh, so I feel better already.
Well, that's the podcast finished. Thank you very much.
Yes.
You can go now back to your doctor, white coat, whatever you do, doctors.
Yeah. But can we just say, are we allowed to say, because you told me before the podcast started, are we allowed to say what your husband does?
Of course.
So he's an air traffic controller. So no wonder, like, it's easier to parrot, because he's just like, right, you, left, shoes.
With every 30 seconds, in. We need gaps between landings.
With his little table tennis bats, cornflakes.
And just a fire truck outside on standby.
Just
in case of a fire.
I mean, those cameras really have been working. You got it. You completely got it.
God, I feel like this is Ellie's utopia, because Ellie loves order and structure. And you're like, I can just see the joy in your little face, Ellie.
I'm starting to regret my own life choices.
Yeah.
I wish I'd... Does he ever wear the uniform, you know, when you're...
Little paddle on the bottom.
Was he not one of the men on the runway?
No, he's not. No, he's all computer with dots. But it's so interesting, because I would be useless. I see patterns... and I don't see detail. So I would be there saying to the planes, oh, I don't know, just shift left a little bit. Yeah. Yikes, sorry. You know, whereas he is so specific that actually I think it's a good combo.
Yeah.
Good combo.
Oh, I'm trying to think of any other relationships in my life that might reflect a similar model. Just can't think of any.
Oh, something might turn up, Ellie.
Yeah, something
ding,
will turn up.
Go back to your past.
A good hard think. Yes.
So you've been a child psychologist your whole career, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right. Yep. So I qualified in 2002. So it's a bit of a long schlep, actually, to be a clinical psychologist. So you do your undergraduate psychology degree, then you've got to go and get experience
in the field, yes.
So you get kind of looped into this sort of really difficult period. But then you apply to get onto a clinical psychology course, which is a doctorate in clinical psychology, and that's where the bottleneck is. So you get hundreds, thousands of people graduating with psychology degrees, and then there's 10 places on a clinical psychology course, and there's only 30 courses in the UK. So suddenly it's like, but luckily I got on, and then I qualified for that. It's a three-year course in 2002. Always knew I wanted to work with kids, love kids. And so it's been that, 18 years.
So did you become a child, is it psychiatrist or psychologist?
Psychologist. There's about £100,000 per year difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. At least.
You want to get that spelling right then.
Yeah, I do.
Filling out the application form. So did you become that before you had kids?
So yes, I did.
Right.
Yeah.
So has having kids changed your work?
Definitely. So I used to sit there with parents before I had my own children. And, you know, you would talk about, let's say, for example, trying to get the kid out of the house in the morning and just these sort of awful arguments and debates that happen. And I would sit there and just say, look, if they don't get out of their pyjamas, you take them to school in their pyjamas. Because this is these whole behavioural principles. They've got to learn natural consequences. So you as a parent can say to them, you can't go to school in your pyjamas. And they'll go, yeah, I can. So you send them to school in their pyjamas. And the, you know, social shame means that they'll never do it again. So I used to sit there absolutely convinced this was the way forward until I then had my own children and realised, actually, as a parent, you just can't let them go in their pyjamas.
Yeah.
No, it's just too awful. So definitely changed how I do my work. I'm more empathic, I think. But in a way, I'm also a bit harsher because I just kind of know what's possible and not possible.
Yeah. You have walked a mile in their shoes. You know how hard it is and you've been on the front line.
That's it. It's difficult. And then, you know, like, I don't know, I'll say to my husband, oh my gosh, you know, one of my children has just said this, she's guaranteed to have an anxiety disorder at the age of 15. And he's like, what? She's 3 years old. What are you talking about? So almost knowing
she just doesn't like skips. Just give her some quavers. Shut up.
This is run the path. So a little bit too much knowledge hasn't been useful at some point, but you know, parenting, you just got to go gut instinct, haven't you? So
how do you get them out of their pyjamas in the morning? Come on, wizard.
Yeah.
Come on,
never,
Dumbledore.
Never bribery.
Get out of my house.
Not even your house. I'll be the one to throw her out. Get out of my house.
So my son a few years ago, so he's doing swimming lessons, hated swimming lessons, but it's like that is one of those no-go things. You've got to learn to swim just vaguely and then you can stop swimming lessons. And I try not to tell people what I do. I just say I work at the university, but one of the mums in the swimming lesson had figured out from somebody else what I do. So I was aware of that. Anyway, my son was refusing to get in the water and he was just standing at the side going, I'm not going in. And I was like, darling, you need to go in. Remember what the worry monster says. And he was like, the worry monster tells me that it's all going to go wrong. And I'm like, no, don't listen to the worry monster. So I was doing all this psychology stuff. And he's like there and he's just sobbing and he's sobbing. And I'm thinking, I'm standing here in front of seven other mums.
So you weren't going, you're not getting iPad for a week. Just get in there.
So it got to the point and it was going nowhere and I was just getting hotter and hotter. And then I leant down to him and I said, if you don't get in that pool, there's no way you're getting 6 chocolate biscuits this evening. Oh my god, and he just jumped straight in.
That a girl, well done.
And I pulled myself up proudly and sort of strutted back to the mums and they were like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? I said, well, it's just, you know, it's just a lot of psychology. I had literally
chocolate coated psychology
my son to get into that swimming pool. So bribery. It's incentivising. It's not bribery, it's incentivising.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's important. It's not about talking, it's about Jaffa Cakes.
Quite frankly, it's about Jaffa Cakes.
Yeah,
Jaffa Cakes.
I like that. What's the worry monster then? That sounds like a good...
So one form of therapy with children is to externalise their worries. So, you know, if they're worried about going to school or they're worried about, you know, any such thing, then rather than say to them, what is it you're worried about? Don't be ridiculous, it's just going to be fine. You externalise it. So you create a worry monster or a anxiety gremlin or a Darth Vader character, whatever, and then you say, what is the worry monster telling you? And then suddenly it becomes a lot easier for them to figure out what it is they're worried about, and then they can stand up to the worry monster. So the monster becomes a bully, it becomes a sort of a meanie, and then they can stand up to it in a way that's very hard to do when you're just trying to figure out your own thoughts when you're seven. So you say, what's the worry monster telling you? What will happen? What can you say back to the worry monster? You could say, you're not telling me the truth. I'm not going to believe you, as you would to a bully.
Yeah.
And then you try and create then a lovely little helpful voice. So Darth Vader, Yoda, we often use, or, you know, various characters from things. But and then what's the helpful
Boris Johnson, whatever you like.
Boris Johnson, Trump.
Yeah.
And now before we launch into your amazing book, I just wondered, as Ellie would say, nuggets of wisdom for parents. Have you got a few sort of parenting mantras or things that everybody can just take away to be better mums and dads?
To be better, so at any time.
At any time. I'm just basically doing some kind of basic...
life hacks. We want life hacks.
Some potions.
Right. Well, I think one of the very important things is to separate your stuff from your child's stuff. So I think we can read as many books and whatever as we want, but we parent based on how we were parented. So we've got that model in mind. So when you are parenting your child, just understand what is your stuff, your history, your baggage, and what is there. So when your child comes to you and says they're sad about this or they're worried about that, the first thing naturally that will come to your head is, oh, God, I remember when I was worried about that, or I remember when that happened to me. Separate yourself from that, because we just keep chucking all our stuff at our kids. Mm. And, you know, let them figure it out themselves. Of course they can learn lessons from our experiences, but let them find their own way. That's the most sort of general, broad-ranging one. And incentivise.
Incentivise.
Is that another word for bribing?
Yeah, yeah.
I've got biscuits, I'm going to be okay.
You're sorted. I can't incentivise with an onion, can I?
No.
The onion incentive. That sounds...
Well, excellent. Now, it's time now for book chat, Ellie.
Let's have some book chat.
Book chat.
Oh, luckily, Ang Harrod has written a book. Thank God for that. Otherwise, this section of the podcast would be really empty.
Oh, my God. It would be so embarrassing. Now, tell us about your book. It's called Find Your Girl Squad.
It is Find Your Girl Squad. And I wrote this book with Ruth Fitzgerald, who's a wonderful children's author. And we wrote it because friendships, when they're going well, make our lives wonderful for all of us, don't they? When our friendships are going well, we feel wanted and loved and cared for and supported, and life's exciting and we feel great. And then when friendships go bad, oh my God, the whole kind of world falls apart, doesn't it? And you feel rubbish, you feel like you're a loser, no one's ever going to love you again, no one's going to like you again, and this is just a hopeless life forevermore. So we thought, given how important friendship is and given how little there is around for girls about friendship, well, and boys, but we thought they're slightly different. We'll focus on girls first. We should write a book for girls.
What is the difference between girls' friendships and boys'?
Well, it's the same issues played out differently. Right. So girls are very socially sophisticated and therefore very socially demanding. So they require a lot of sort of nuances socially and can do a lot with a look or with a curl of the lip. Whereas boys are a lot more physical and active. So when you think about the guys in our lives, brothers, dads, partners, whatever, their friendships, they don't sit on the phone chatting for hours and, you know.
That's where they've gone wrong.
Exactly, bless them. You know, what they do, they go and share an activity together, they'll go into a pub together and they'll have these shared interests, and they're very much a doing kind of relationships, their friendships. Whereas girls are a lot more about the chat and stuff. And as I say, because it's a lot more about the chat, there's a lot more that can go wrong in that way. So that's why I thought we'd focus on girls first.
Yeah.
And so it's a non-fiction book. And as we probably all know in non-fiction books, you get halfway through, and because there's no plot, you sort of think, anyway, yes, I'll drift off now to something else. So we were very keen to have some kind of narrative.
Did you put a sex bit in? That's what I'd do. Halfway through, put a knobby.
And then a murder. Yeah, and then a murder.
Oh, my God, we missed our tricks, didn't we? Yeah. We missed our tricks.
Teenage girls are all over that.
Well, they are.
Also, there's
no
pictures.
I've got pictures, and we've got crazy funds, and we've got Poppy. So we follow Poppy through her day-to-day life with friends. So she is our little guinea pig. And we teach her all of our super psychology secrets through the book. And what we were very keen to do is, both Ruth and I, yes, have been girls and yes, have messed up our friendships, but we wanted it to be based on science as well. So it's not just us going, look, do it our way, this is the best thing. It's about saying, what does research tell us about relationships in the playground, about girls from 9 to 12, for, you know, what makes them happy, what makes them not happy, why do they keep getting stuck in certain kind of difficult situations? So we've used research to fuel our super psychology secrets.
And because it's such a massive, I've got an 11-year-old daughter, and it's such a massive transition, because she's in year six, she's having massive sort of anxieties about starting high school, girls are getting boobs, she's been teased about her body from other girls, all sorts of things. You know, you go into protective mode as a mum, but, you know, you also want to give them that resilience and the ability to deal with it, because it's not going away. You've got to deal with friendships and ups and downs for the rest of your life. So, but this feels like the biggest time, that sort of 9 to...
Absolutely. And that's why we were keen to target that sort of age group, even though girls 7 or 8 have read it and I've had great feedback from them. I've had girls of 14 read it and give great feedback as well. So I think actually... Oh, everybody will get something out of it. But I think it's that transition time when girls just get a little bit more sassy and just start playing the sort of social game a little bit more. It's a lot about hierarchy and who's in, who's out. And then body change is this very visible. So you can get difference quite quickly picked up on by other girls. So yeah, and it's tricky. And of course, as a parent, you want to make it all better, and you just want to make it all right. And of course, you are on your child's side more than any other child. So you're going to believe their version of the story. You're going to get as cross as they are about Bella who's done this or blah, blah, who's done that. Whereas actually, we just need to take a little step back and just think, what is it that I could do here that's most helpful? And protecting them from it isn't the most helpful. Because we are all grown-ups in worlds where we still have problems with friendships, we still have problems with colleagues, bosses, you know, other mums, husbands, other mums on the school playground. So we've got to learn how to deal with it. And and with our sort of super psychology secrets, it's very much about accepting that other people are different, being flexible, knowing it's never going to be perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're at a spot where your friendship's going really well, brilliant, enjoy it, celebrate it, but don't assume this is how it's going to be.
Sounds great.
And I want to know about the practical thing, because of if your child is being bullied by another person and, you know, say for over a number of years and you've always gone to the teacher, you've always gone to the head, and everyone's like, don't ever contact the mum. Don't ever contact the kid. And when it keeps going, what is the right thing to do? How do you stop? How does that? Because sometimes I know from friends, this is one of the hardest things they've had to deal with at school.
It is.
You can get a tutor for your kid if you can afford it, or you can try and help get extra help for their academic stuff. But when your child is being bullied all the time, that's really hard.
It's so hard. It's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking, and that's where the bumps in the road become major obstacles to actually well-being and development and stuff, you know, when bullying is happening time and time again. And the sad fact about life is we cannot control other people, we cannot change other people, we can't make people love us, want to be with us, stop being mean to us, you know, we just can't. But what we can do is change ourselves and recognize things in ourselves. So for example, when, you know, time after time you go into school and just say something needs to change about the bullying, of course schools have different perspectives and they've got to think about 30 kids rather than just one.
Yeah.
So they rarely do as much as you want them to do. That's just what I hear, you know, all the time. So what you've got to do is armour your child. You know, there is always going to be people like this, but these are the things that you can do to protect yourself. Biggest and first and foremost thing is to talk. Don't ever deal with the bullying by yourself, you know, because it takes on a whole different perspective then. And I work with kids and we talk about very simple things like the way you stand. You know, people can tell so much about you and your vulnerability by the way you walk and the way you stand and the way you look. So if you're kind of just shuffling along with your eyes down and just trying to hide and kind of creep into the wall, bullies are going to see and think, fantastic, we've got someone here who doesn't feel great about themselves, I'm going to go for it. And so that's not saying you deserve it in any way, shape, or form. But by doing simple things like standing up, shoulders back, head up, and looking straight ahead, you're already giving a slightly different message about who you are and what you are. Bullies are desperately unhappy people. You know, no happy person bullies. Just doesn't happen.
No.
And with your child, depending on their age and how emotionally kind of overwhelmed they are, having some sense of being able to say to your child, you know what, they keep doing that because they are so unhappy.
Yeah.
And they're probably getting bullied at home, so they're going to come into school and bully you to try and make themselves feel better. So, you know, some research has shown that being able to put yourself in that other person's shoe, it doesn't stop you feeling absolutely distraught that you're being bullied, but it does help you to realise it's not you, that actually it's them being terribly unhappy and just wanting to lash out at others.
And what's nice is about it is that someone's got some pain and then they decided, instead of dealing with the pain themselves, they just spread that pain as far and wide as possible, which is what a lovely gift.
Yes, that's a very sensible attitude. And what do you do? Because, like, obviously one of my biggest fears is my children being bullied. We were both, weren't we, Helen? Very badly bullied at school. Like 95% of comedians.
And here we are. Yes,
here we are, bullying each other all day. So we've been through it. And of course I don't want my kids to do that. But also I have a terrible fear that what if my kid does that? What do you do if someone comes to you and goes, right, actually, we've got a problem here. Your child has been bullying this other child. I know it sounds mental. In some way in my head, I think for me that might even be worse than my child being bullied.
Absolutely. And it comes back to your thing about, do you call the mum? you know, I would want to know if my child was being mean to others or making them unhappy in whatever undeliberate way or deliberate way, I would want to know. So I think actually, if you know the mother of a child who is seeming apparently bullying your child, give them a call. Don't text. Give them a call.
Okay.
Just say, any chance we could have a little chat? I think there's some stuff going on between our girls or our boys. Any chance we could have a chat? And then don't go in there and say, your child has made my child feel like this. Open up the conversation with, do you know what's going on at the moment? Because, you know, my child's a bit unhappy and I can't figure out what it is that's going on. And work it out together, because we don't know our children are bullies or not. You know, you're right to have a worry, because you just think, well, how would I know? So we have to, you know, girl squad together and assume that someone's going to tell you if your child is a bully. If your child is very unhappy, there's a good chance they're going to be doing some bullying. So that's a clue that you think, actually, you know what, they're really grumpy at home, they're crying all the time, we're having a tough time as a family, then chances are they're going to be taking it out on their peers one way or another. So call and have a chat. But it's interesting what you're saying about bullying, because humour is a great protector against bullying.
I don't know what you mean.
As a way of dealing
with bullying. It's not as a defence mechanism, if that's what you're insinuating.
It's more of a sword than a shield, okay?
Oh, I love it.
I'm completely happy all of the time. Nothing to defend myself from. I don't know what you mean. Never thought about this.
Ellie Gibson's been seen.
But thinking about humour, it is one of our values, because what the main basis, what our main super psychology secret is, actually, if you know yourself and you accept yourself for who you are, then you're going to wiggle your way through life in a much more solid manner, because actually you are, this is, you know, you're able to say, this is me, this is who I am, these are my strengths, weaknesses, or whatever, and you can present yourself rather than try to figure out, oh, I could be like that. And of course, the times where we've all got into trouble is where we've done something that we knew really probably wasn't right for us, but, oh yeah, I'll give it a go, you know, whether to fit in or to be accepted or to be cared for and loved. So values is really important, and humour is one of the values that we talk about in this book, because you can choose like your top three values, and that those values then help you to understand yourself, but they guide you through life. They're like your sat nav in a way. So when you get to a really difficult point, you can either choose to act moving towards your values or choose to act moving away from your values. But whichever choice you make, you're making a choice rather than just kind of drifting through life, figuring out, why do I keep getting into that same pattern? Why does that keep happening to me? So values are very important.
So what kind, when you say values, what kind of things do you mean?
Well, humour's one of them.
Humour.
They're usually one word. You can have two occasionally, but they're usually one word things like kindness, family, curiosity, excitement, challenge, control. There's a whole load of them.
Wine.
I'm not sure wine's a value yet. After 4 months of self-isolation,
it's,
I think
it's very valuable.
What are your three values?
Well, you
Dr.
know what?
Ann Harris, Rudkin, if there is your real name,
Camembert, laughing, and Netflix.
You know what's really interesting? Ask girls this, and we do, we've worked with lots of girls around this book, and, you know, research has come up with all these values, and of course there's no definitive list, but girls and kindness seems to be such a value for females. And I was about to say kindness, you know, I want to be someone who people go, oh, Angharad, she's kind. But I think determination and independence as well. I like to think I'm my own boss. And I'm sure it's an illusion, but I like to think that. I like to think.
Have you mentioned that to your boss?
Yeah, no. Well, not my husband, in fact.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to stop you here. I mean, these are my values, so I'm actually the boss now, and I've written it down.
I'm actually the boss of both of you. I know.
Yeah. But when we talk to girls, and you know, you've got one girl whose values are kindness, family, and friendship, and then you've got someone else in their class whose values are challenge, determination, and independence. You know, no wonder they clash, because this one's going to be wanting to be boss and be in charge of everything, and this one's going, oh, just be nice. And that helps girls to understand, this is why I really respect those values, because no one value is better or worse than the other. They all are positively equal. But it helps you to understand, you know, why do I keep on going for that kind of man and then it all goes wrong? Or when you're a 9-year-old girl, how come this keeps happening in a playground and I'm left on my own and I want no one to play with me? So values are different to goals. So we all tend to, we're in a very goal-driven society. You know, I need to lose this much weight. I need to earn that much money. I need to get that many points on Fortnite or whatever. Actually, if you live according to values rather than goals, there's no end point. You can just keep living according to values, and then that gets you off the hook.
And would the values bit apply to boys as well?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. And you were talking about a shield earlier on, and we one of the kind of very popular ways of thinking about your values is to develop your own shield.
Yeah.
You know, with, you know, like in the olden days, the lion for bravery and blah, blah. You know, you develop your own shield, and these are my values. And boys love that kind of thing as well.
Look, literally, like, draw a shield.
Absolutely. And we've got a big list of values there, and then you draw your values or write your values or represent your values in some way. And that is you. And it's like, here I am, guys.
I'm gonna spell my values out in cheese strings and eat them all. That's what I'm gonna do. Can't wait.
Oh, that sounds so fantastic. So the book is out now.
It came out
in January 2020.
Yeah,
and obviously you can buy it from anywhere, because I've learnt that lesson. I was gonna say, and where can people buy it?
Anywhere.
Google it currently through the internet. A drone will deliver it to your house.
Yes.
I just think bloody well done, because this is one of the biggest things you'll have to negotiate, you know, as a person, as a young person, but as a parent as well, because your children are your heart.
Yeah.
And when they are sad, you cannot shake that. You cannot separate that from you.
No. And I think this, you know, if you as a parent read this as well, then it helps you to keep coming back to that when your child's having a few friendship difficulties.
Mm.
And what I've said to all the families that I work with as well, read this when things are going well, because then you've got all the ideas in your head, because we talk also about assertiveness and communication and problem solving. Have all those ideas in your head. So when things get difficult, you're not scrabbling about going, oh, what do I do? You can just think, oh, I'll tell you what, let's think again about values. Let's think about acceptance and flexibility. So that's quite useful to do. So even if your child is having a good time at the moment, it's still useful to read, I would say.
Because I heard a thing the other day with, I think, Philippa Perry, who's a psychotherapist we've had on the podcast before, and she was on another podcast. I think she was talking about, you know, that we all kind of say we want our children to be happy, but it's unrealistic to expect your children to be happy all the time. And that is actually putting a huge amount of pressure on you and on them to kind of, and it's just not achievable.
No, it's not. And you know what, I was just thinking the other day, you know, what do you want? What do I want for my children? And I think I want them to be lovable, because I think if you're lovable, life's going to be all right.
Mm.
You're going to have bumpy times, but somebody's always going to have your back, aren't they?
Mm. Yeah.
And that is my aim, not to have happy children, because quite frankly, it'd be sickening if you had happy children all the time, because you'd think they're all a bit weird.
Yeah.
You know, moments of happiness, yes, please, but that is not what I'm trying to achieve for my children. I want them to be lovable.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
As we always say, hashtag be kind, hashtag don't be a shitbag. That's really all any of us can ask of each other.
Exactly. Really, yeah. Exactly.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
But all Elliot, right. Wouldn't be the Scummy Mummies podcast if we didn't end with Scummy Mummies confessions.
That's literally true. Angharad, have you got one you could share with
us?
Oh
my god. You've got
three kids.
Let me hear yours first and then I'll judge mine accordingly.
God, I've got a scummy mommy confession. Actually happened last night. My son was doing a wee and he thought he was really clever and that he held the end of his willy and he did a pee and so the penis kind of puffed up like a water balloon and then he let it go and the pee just went whoosh. And me and my daughter, because we just happened to be brushing our teeth, and he was like, look at this trick. And I was like, oh my god, Matilda was like, do it again. I was like, no, don't do it again. And then, yeah, and look, we're a big fan of Barocca in our house, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. We're all like a daily Barocca. And it was just like some kind of nuclear spill.
Like a bomb in a Fanta factory. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, don't do that, kids.
Yeah, don't do that. I've got one also about my 8-year-old son, funnily enough. So at the moment, his favourite TV show is Hell's Kitchen, which I'm letting him watch.
It's actually on CBBC.
That's right, it's on CBBC. And it's Nick Jr. No, it's...
In the Night Kitchen.
Yes. Sarah and Fuck. So it's actually quite rare that we find like a show that we can all watch together because they just want to watch bloody YouTube and CBeebies. So I've sort of like, I really like cooking and I really like Hell's Kitchen. So I've started letting him watch it, even though it's obviously incredibly sweary because it's just Gordon Ramsay going, fuck you and your fucking sausages, like for hours on end. But I let him watch it on condition, because he knows what swear words are anyway by now.
He does
on
now.
On condition that he's not allowed to repeat the swear words. And if I hear him saying one of these swear words on Hell's Kitchen, then immediately it will stop. We'll cut off his supply.
Of Gordon Ramsay.
Fine, of Gordon Ramsay.
No, Mummy, right. I need more Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, he's addicted. It's brilliant. Yeah, he loves it. He fucking loves it. So this morning I go to the bathroom and it was all steamed up from the shower. And I was like, and he was like writing, I was like, oh, are you writing me a little message on the mirror? And he was like, yep. And I went over and looked and he'd just written in a vertical line, fuck. And I went, oh, Charlie, how dare you? You know you're not supposed to use that word. And he was like, but I didn't say it. You didn't say I couldn't write it down.
Whoa! Whoa!
And he was genuinely shocked. He was like, I thought it'd be funny. And I was like, it is not. Also, so it was a bit of a disaster. So that's working out really well.
I mean, clever children's really annoying.
I know. Yeah. That's the problem, isn't it?
Infuriating. Pedantic children. I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Ahead.
No. So, have you got one?
God, you know what? I'm sitting here and balloon willies and mirror writing. I'm just not even sure. Let me think. Oh God, I mean, they're just so mundane. And I think that's the reality, isn't it, of parenting. I sat there, you know, we had our family meal last night. And so we're sitting there,
just the one.
And, you know, my husband's cooked this whole family meal. He's starving, so he's not particularly in a good mood. My son is eating with his hands still, whilst kind of sat vaguely perched on the seat and not going anywhere near the vegetables, and that's just ongoing. And so we're doing this whole thing where we're trying to have a conversation, but you know, it keeps going back to, will you just eat a bit of that, just have a carrot, just have a try of that. And then he kept asking to go down to watch Paw Patrol, and we kept going no. And in the end, just midway, he can leave the table without eating any vegetables, and when we're still mid-meal, quite frankly, had enough.
Yes, quite
and
right.
Every single part of my brain is going, no, those textbooks that you spent years studying, consistency, consequence, clear boundaries, blah. No.
Just
an easy life. Just an easy life.
In the bin with the carrots.
No.
Put the textbook in the bin.
That's it. Get some Barocca.
Yeah. Is he safe? Is
and
he loved?
Go and
is
watch
he fed?
Paw Patrol.
Yes.
For the 100th time today.
Yeah.
At least it's Paw Patrol Ultimate now.
Yeah. Does he come to you and give you a cuddle?
Oh, he does.
Done. So I'm just telling the child psychologist.
Do you sleep well tonight?
Yeah. You're doing great.
But you know what? You forget those bits, don't you?
Yeah.
You just think, oh,
I
see.
I need this and this and this and this.
And actually, just those little kisses and cuddles.
Yeah.
I know.
Lovely.
Oh, you're not a fucker. Oh,
you're only a little bit of one.
Well, thank you so much. So your book, Find Your Girl Squad, is out now.
It is.
Where can people follow you or perhaps pest you for more free advice?
I keep a very low profile.
Well, there we go. Yes, now you can follow us on social media at Scummy Mummies.
Do rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. Tell everybody about it because you're all indoors. Listen to the podcast. That would be great. And of course, our book, Ellie,
it's still in print.
And usually quite affordable from that website, we all know. But yeah, thank you so much. You've been delightful, honest, and, you know, I'm sure being very reassuring for everyone listening.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been great fun.
And thank you for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye! Well, I think you're lovable and I think you're amazing. So thank you very much, Anne Harris.
What am I, chop liver?
We've got time to talk about that later.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.